Hello, what's good? Episode 3, 99.9 Chuki FM. Today I want to talk about what are we going to replace church with? What are we going to replace church with? That's going to be a running theme, I think, in a lot of the stuff that I start to talk about coming up. Like with this little podcast thing, I think it's part of the reason I got back online, and because I need to process these thoughts out loud. Something about me is that I have to process my thoughts out loud to some extent. That's when certain things click for me. And of course, I've said in the last two episodes that I'm thinking a lot about new systems and what's going to replace our old systems, what's coming after that. Because after every, you know, the sun always rises again. That's the way that I look at things. I look at things like anything that is lost will be restored and will be found again. I believe in renewal, like, you know, I'm going to say I acknowledge those things, not that I believe in those things, because you can look around and you can see it, right? You can look around and you can see it with, you know, the plants that grow, you know, and the trees and the mushrooms and the flowers and the, you know, the fashion trends. You can look around and you can see that the sun always does rise. And so, I wanna have a conversation about what I love about church and religion in general now, and what I want to take from it into this new system that we build for ourselves as, like, our economy is crumbling, as our music industry is crumbling, our entertainment industry, as, like, as church culture itself is crumbling and, like, it's losing its grip on our society. Today I went to church and I spoke on Instagram earlier about how I wasn't such a fan of, like, some of the rhetoric there, but I still decided to go because for me, I think that I'm at a mature place in my journey. And excuse me if y'all hear, like, the kettle going, because I'm trying to make some tea. I'm at a mature place in my mente where, like, I can go for the ritual of gathering with people and community, because that's what I believe in, right? And that's what I think really is the thing, right? And I can ignore, you know, or I can let the words slide off of me. You see what I'm saying? Because I believe that what makes people keep coming back to church is that there's something about gathering with people, playing music, moving in sync with other people, gathering in cooperation, that is replenishing and healing to a person, and it keeps them going, you know, psychologically. And if you notice, a lot of people who tend to, if they didn't grow up that way, or if they grew up that way and they kind of went on the scenic route in life, they kind of end up back at church, or people who join churches, they tend to do it at times where they are really searching for community because they're isolated and they're struggling. You know, you don't hear as many stories about people going to church when they are, when nothing wrong is happening in their life. And I feel like they acknowledge that a lot in church sermons, but they attribute that to being, you know, the enemy. And, you know, the enemy is going to distract you with all good things in life, and then you forget about God, and just, and I don't subscribe to any of that. I don't believe that that's the case. However, I think that if you do want to talk about an enemy, I think capitalism distracts us from feeding ourselves, feeding our spirits and feeding our minds, right? And processing our emotions. I think capitalism tells everybody that we don't got time for that, you know? So I think that that enemy definitely is there. If you want to call that the devil, yeah, that's definitely keeping you away from church until you at your last and you have nowhere to run. And it's like the system is just not working for you. You have to find a new one that's going to take you in, right? And a lot of times people go to church because they need resources, right? Community resources. When I was growing up, the church sisters would... the church sisters would support us. Sometimes my mom needed the help and the church sisters would take up a collection for us. And that's how we ate, or that's how we kept the lights on, or that's how we, you see what I'm saying? That is something that you can find without a lot of red tape, right? Because if you go to the government is like, you know, you need 50,000 documents. You need to comply with this. You need to comply with that. And it's very punitive, right? The New York, right? The New York, like, food stamps line. Like, if you call a food stamps line for anything, they'll be, like, listing out to you while you're on hold. Instead of, like, talking about, you know, food safety and maybe, like, using that time that, like, nobody's on the line to, like, maybe educate, you know, or put something that gives value to the person on the line. They list out a bunch of ways that you're going to be punished if you don't comply with whatever. Like, literally, they will tell you they're going to sanction you for this amount of time and they're going to sanction you for this amount of time. Like, that's how it is. It's very punitive, right? So when you go to church, even though church can be punitive in its own way when you think about the Christian rhetoric, in terms of, like, acquiring resources from the people around you, people in church are happy to help you and they're eager to help you. Not all the time, but a lot of the time, at least in my experience, that's been the case. And they don't make you feel bad about it, right? And that is a strong deterrent for a lot of people getting help. Like I said, for myself in the first episode, like, I don't like to go around asking for help because I feel like I'm a burden. And if I do ask for help, I feel a lot of shame around it and I cannot relax into it and really feel supported, allow myself to feel supported, because I feel like guilty if I get comfortable. I feel guilty if I relax because, you know, I feel like I'm a burden and I'm taking food out of somebody else's mouth, right? And they're spreading themselves thin to help me. And a lot of people are like that. A lot of people are truly like that. Give me 1 second. Let me pour my tea and then I'm gonna be right back. So one of the things that I said earlier in my Instagram story about this experience that I had at church today. So what's funny is that this was a church that I was not technically supposed to be at today. And I know if you ask them, they'd be like, this is the church. Literally, like, probably 10 people said that to me. Like, this is the church God wanted you to be at. That's not a coincidence. All right, girl, whatever. This church, had the same name as the church that I actually got invited to, and it's in the same part of town, right? However, somebody yesterday had told me about this church with its nickname, and it's this church called Dream Center here in Atlanta, and told me about it yesterday. And what's funny is the person who was doing my hair told me about it yesterday, and then today, I put the name of the church that I was supposed to go to in the GPS on Uber, and I went. And when I got there, you know, through a chain of events, I realized it's not the church I was invited to. So that was funny. But what I had, the experience that I had today had me thinking about how, like, in a lot of groups, spiritual groups, religions, cults, you know, things like that. It attracts a lot of people who really do mean well and who really do mean, it just attracts a lot of people who really mean well and who want to do well for themselves and others. And, you know, no matter how much I will criticize the Christian church, those are God's people. Right? Not exclusively. Those are not exclusively God's people. You do not have to be a Christian to be God's people. You don't have to go to church to be acknowledged by God. To get your blessings. That is something I'm truly against. I'm truly against the idea that you're going to lose your blessings if you don't join this church today because God guided your steps here. And they was giving some of that. And I did roll my eyes and giggle because for me, I've been through that many times in many different forms. So it does not make me stir. Like I'm very able to sit. I'm very able to like just sit there and sit in my cunt. While they try to stir urgency in my spirit and stir fear in my spirit about how do I know if I die tonight, if I'm gonna spend eternity with the Lord. That's not gonna make me stir at this point in my life, right? And so I chose to go to church today because I was really searching for music. Growing up, I went to a Caribbean church, and I think Caribbean church music is more heavy. The emphasis is more on the rhythm with Caribbean church music. And in Black American church music, the emphasis is on the vocal tradition, right? There's no lack of rhythm, definitely. But the emphasis is more on the vocal tradition, and there's a stronger overall vocal tradition in the Black American church. And you know, so when I grew up, like, I didn't really enjoy the music that much of my church. When I was a kid, I liked listening to the pastor preach because I guess that's the part of me that likes podcasts and things like that. You know, back then that was the outlet for like the real life, like podcasts, like you listen to the pastor every Sunday and he would be doing basically what I'm doing right now, you know? And so I like that. Like, mommy would try to send me to like Sunday school downstairs, and Sunday school was a little too ABC 1-2-3 for me, and the kids was weird. So I never wanted to go down there. I always wanted to sit with her in the sanctuary and listen to pastor preach. But I went to this church for the music because I always wanted to experience a real Black American church that you see on TV. One of my favorite movies growing up that I was rewatching last night and this morning is The Fighting Temptations with Beyonce and Cuba Gooding Jr. and Mike Epps. That was a star-studded cast, actually. A lot of people. Angie Stone was in there. Like, it's a lot of people in there. The OJs. That movie really was my introduction into that was my window into what Black church culture looked like. And I watched that movie so much growing up that like it doesn't feel foreign to me today, even though I didn't grow up in a church like that. And my church was comprised mostly of people from the islands. You know, between that and like Tyler Perry, right? Because I grew up watching Tyler Perry plays, and you know, my mom would get the bootlegs of all of the Madea plays and shit like that. And first on the VHS and then on the DVD. So Black American church culture is not something that I'm unfamiliar with, but I'd never experienced it in real life. And I always wanted to just like go and get the spirit, because what I loved gospel music as a kid, and gospel music always moved me. Gospel music, I would cry. Like, I wouldn't cry to nothing. Like, I was always very responsive to music in general. However, when it came to gospel music, I'd be crying. You know what song would make me cry? The Kirk Franklin version of Our God is an Awesome God. Oh, my God. All those, like, Hillsong, like, the white people church versions, those versions make me roll my eyes. The Kirk Franklin version. Bitch, oh my God. That would make me cry. I would be overcome with emotion. And, you know, when I was in church, my actual church, I always used to feel a little, it never drew me into that extent, right? And I used to wonder, why don't I ever get the spirit? Like, I'm engaged here. I'm engaged in what they're saying, like everybody else, but it's just not bringing me to that point. Like, why don't I get that feeling? Why I'm not, like, crying and carrying on? And, like, I went to a Pentecostal church and was big in Pentecostal church. At least the Caribbean ones, I don't know about any other ones, is speaking in tongues, right? Catching the Holy Spirit and speaking in tongues. And what would happen is somebody would be doing their obashatas, right? And they'd be like, yada, da, 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 blah, 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 blah. And then somebody, and then the there would be silence, and then somebody else in the church would translate the message into English, right? And I'm not interested in going down the rabbit hole of whether that was real or not. I do not care, honestly. However, when I was a child, I did care. And I always wondered, how come I never got the message? How come the message never came to me? How come I was never overcome in that way? And part of it is that what I was responding to with Kirk Franklin's music is good music, like the music, like, and I don't want to shit on Caribbean church tradition. I don't want to say it's not good music, but in my opinion, it is not in comparison to Black American church music. I'm sorry. It's just not as good. It's fun. That's the thing. Caribbean church music is fun. Like, it's very bouncy. And, like, you know, like, you could get into it. I think maybe I wasn't much of a dancer as a kid, and that's what it was. I'm more inclined to dance now. When I was a kid, I wasn't much of a dancer. I didn't think I was good at dancing or anything like that. And so that's how you were going to get into it, you know, if you were going to get into it. And I did not really do that. So maybe that's what it was. I don't want to say, I don't know if I want to say that Caribbean church music is not good music. It's not my cup of tea in comparison to Black American church music, though. I love Mia Kirk Franklin, like, all of the girls y'all know, like the Kim Burrells, the Clark sisters, like, all of that stuff. Love it. Mary, that's what I liked. That's the gospel music that I liked growing up. And not everything. Like, I cannot stand Break Every Chain. Please. My church wore that out, child. My church wore out Break Every Chain. I hate that song. I'm so sorry to that lady, Tasha Cobbs. I never want to hear Tasha Cobbs ever. Anyway, so that's why I went to church today. I went because I wanted to feel the spirit, quote unquote, from the music. And I believe that that's powerful just by virtue of being music in a community setting. People feel this way when they go to concerts. It could be for any kind of music. People feel this way. And so church is a free way to experience that. And so that's why I went. And I think that I've seen some conversations online, especially on TikTok, about the lack of third places in our society now and how that's contributing to the, like, neurotic psychological breakdown that we are experiencing together right now. I think we're in a very anxious and neurotic time period, phase as a society. We live very much in our heads because we just never get into our body. The only time that people get into their body is, you know, the gym, right? When they go to the gym. And if you're not going to the gym, a lot of people really don't have an outlet for that, right? And so I think that is, and I really do believe that that's part of the illness that we're experiencing right now, because life has been flattened out to work and home, right? And because there's no casual third place, there's also no physical platforms for socializing. There's not as many physical platforms for socializing that are not requiring you to spend money and that are not an event. You can go to a church at any time and just hang out and talk to people. You know, if you don't feel like being home, if you need something to do, okay, girl, you can go and help the church brothers carry some waters or something. You can go and get up off them dicks and do something positive with your life. So I think that that is missing in our culture now because adults don't have no place like that. They really don't. Kids don't even really have a place like that. Like, school is, that's not what school really is for primarily, even though it's incorporated into school with recess and maybe some extracurricular activities. The casualness of those things is not at the forefront. It's not something you can just walk into unless you're growing up in the suburbs. Nowadays, kids don't even play outside. Like, they, you know, it's not as safe as it used to be. Like, back in the days, like in New York, in the hood, like when even me, honestly, and I'm not saying that that completely doesn't exist anymore, but I don't see kids playing outside. In New York, I don't never see no kids playing outside. You probably live in the suburbs if your kids is playing outside right now. In New York, when I was growing up, my mom, she didn't have me outside like that all the time because she was very much, my mom is very like, if you don't have a reason to be outside, why are you outside, right? And she loves taking a walk, and she used to like to go like every now and then, like she would go sit on a parkway when we used to live in Crown Heights. Like, she'll go sit on a parkway. And, you know, stuff like that. And that was, like, every now and then. But most of the time, you inside the house if you don't have something explicit to do outside. However, there were eras of my life where my mom would be at work and I used to hang out. There were many Jamaican restaurants that, like, growing up, I used to hang out there after school. And they used to watch me until mommy came home. And that allowed me to be able to like have access to other kids, and we used to play on the block. Like, we would run up and down the block, and we would play like, we play nigga knock, and we play manhunt, and we play like all time, we make up all types of games and stuff like that. And we would just, you know, and we would go visit other kids at their building, and you know, all the kids would be around. If one kid got in trouble with their parents, like, I experienced that growing up, and I feel like that's a very New York experience. Even more, even when I was growing up, I feel like it was fading away, right? Compared to people that are older than me, that's like, that was just the norm and that was always their life. You know, like, the kids went and they opened the fire hydrant. You see what I'm saying? I never opened the fire hydrant. but I think that's disappearing from our culture now. And partially, it's probably, I think social media is a part of it too, right? Because kids now have a way to entertain themselves at all times that doesn't require them to do other things. And I don't subscribe to like the boogeyman story that kids don't play anymore, because that is not true. All kids want to play. Few kids want to sit on a tablet all day. The kids want to play. They want to get up and they want to play, and they want to play pretend and make believe, right? And they love video games. Like, we loved video games, right? And that's basically what that iPad is. So that is something that for our system going forward, our systems of support in this society that we are going to, that's going to rise from the ashes of this one, third places, we need to bring it back. We need social centers. We need recreation centers. Like, what happened to all the recreation centers? I'm going to tell you a place that made a big difference in my life, and it was The Door. The Door is this place down there in Lower Manhattan, at Broome Street, 555 Broome Street. It's still there. And it was this place that, like, you could find resources for everything. So when I was a teenager, I used to do this, like, music production, like, extracurricular thing, like, on Saturdays that I had found out from Instagram. I used to do that. And then one of the teachers who came there, once that program shut down, he told us, oh, I teach at The Door. Y'all should come to The Door. And then I started going to The Door. And The Door actually ended up being my portal into finding housing when I fell out with my mother when I was 18 and I needed a place to go after I had, like, used up all my tokens with staying at people's house. That's how I ended up, like, in shelters and things like that. And I discovered the world of just, like, that LGBT people have like fought for and created for themselves, for ourselves, for us to have resources when the world turned their back on us. And it was beautiful. The door had a recording studio. Because like I said, the teacher who brought me there was a music production teacher. And so he used to run a music production class at the door. And it was, and yeah, and they had chefs, right? They had chefs, like volunteer chefs. Well, I don't know if they was volunteer, but they had chefs on site who would cook like lunch and dinner. So like you could come during the day and you could come during the evening and you could get lunch and dinner if you didn't have nowhere to eat at. Like if you didn't have no other place that you was going to get a meal, you could come and get a hot meal there. And the food was actually good. Like it wasn't schoolie. You know, like if you went to public school in New York, you know what I'm talking about. Like schoolie is nasty. Like the free school lunch, like most of it, not all of it. There's gems. So like there was food. There was activities. There was dance classes. I took my first like Vogue class there. Master LaBeija used to teach Vogue there. They had all types of stuff. I remember when I was 18, I didn't have no place to rehearse. I had no place to rehearse to do my, because one of my friends had this internship at the Apollo. And so she got me to perform at the Apollo and I didn't really have no place to rehearse. I remember I went there and that's where I found my dancers. Right. One of my dancers was Darius, who's in ballroom now. And I found them two people. And like they was my first like dancers who like performed on stage with me. And we came, and they helped me come up with my routine. I didn't know nothing about choreographing, but they helped me come up with the routine and we practiced. We only had a couple days of practice, but we put it together and we did it. And they gave us like a little classroom like to ourselves where we could just go in there and do our thing. And we did our thing. And they had rehearsal space too. They had like the actual like dance space with the, you know, with the mirrors and everything. And you could plug in your speaker and whatnot. They had all of this. And then they also had a lot of social services resources, right? A lot of social services resources that's like, you could come there and find a social worker that they'll help you. Like say you ran away from home and you don't got none of your papers, like they will help you get your new ID, your new social security number, your new birth certificate. If you dropped out of school, they'll help you get your GED. If you needed housing, they was going to help you get a program to get your own place or to get supportive housing or to get in a shelter. They will help you get a job if you didn't have a job. They might even hire you if you didn't have a job. Stuff like that, like that's the world that I was introduced to, right? And that's not the only program of its nature, but it was one of my favorites because they vary. You know, a lot of times in the free nonprofit world, there can be a lot of bullshit. That has it. That's its own beast with the bullshit that you can experience there. Especially if the focus is underprivileged youth. Like a lot of people that go there look down upon the people that's there. And then there's also the fact that because a lot of these children that are there are troubled, like it can be just a lot of rah-rah-rah. Like it's a lot of rah-rah-rah. And the workers get tired of being disrespected. And they, you know, they don't come to work with a smile on their face every day. It's really hard to do that. And the ones that do, like, they get played with. You know, it takes a certain type of person, usually a person who grew up in that environment, to know how to handle it and know how to talk to people. But the good thing about that space is that you can come and get your resources without it being a personal favor. And so that helps avoid this air of like having things held over your head. Because when you go to a church for social support in that way, like say you need your rent paid, you are asking for personal money from the church aunties, right? Like the church aunties is taking up a collection for you, and or one of them might step in and help you out. And that's beautiful because it's like having a church family. However, like people don't have the social skills to be able to, like a lot of people don't have the social skills to be able to give and it not be personal and it not be not It's not that we don't want it to be personal, right? I'm sure a lot of people would actually prefer that I feel more personal. However, a lot of people don't have the social skills to give without holding it over your head or looking at you as one of their good deeds, right? A lot of people in a church will help you because that's what God wants them to do, DK, which, like, I guess there's nothing wrong with that. However, they're checking something off of a list in their head, and it's not so much that they're just helping you out. And so now they look at you as just like a good deed. Like, you kind of get objectified, and you can be patronized, and that's not a great experience. So what I love about the LGBT stuff is that the playing field is leveled. The resources are for everybody. And it doesn't matter like how much you have, like nobody is like, you don't go into a LGBT center and they start asking you about your income, how much income you got. You can't get these services if you don't have that income. Now, that's the problem with the public services from NYC, right? And this is probably a public services problem in general, but I'm only familiar with NYC because that's where I've lived all my life, right? Depending on how long I'm in Atlanta, this will be the first time that I ever lived outside of New York City. So the public services in New York City, if you like, okay, say you want to get food stamps, right? Say you want to get food stamps and you want to get, I'm putting my business out there because I don't have any shame around this. Like, we all going through it, right? So I told you guys about how I was working in film until the strikes happened, right? Luckily, because I was employed during that time, I was able to get unemployment, which I think I mentioned in my first podcast. Now, unemployment is not a lot of money. It's not really like you barely getting by on unemployment. And certainly, like, had I not been at my mom's house, like, I couldn't, basically what I'm saying is I couldn't pay no real rent nowhere with that. And yeah, I just couldn't. It wasn't going to happen. And so I wanted to have food stamps as well, but they denied me because of my unemployment, because if you make one red cent over their threshold, and their threshold is very low, you basically have to be like at starving level to get any help from them, right? They'll deny you if you make one red cent over that threshold. And there is no preventative approach, right? When you go to the city, you have to go to the city when everything has blown up in your fucking face, because they don't want you to come to them. They want to be your last resort, because the whole thing is, we don't got no money. We don't got no money. We don't got no money. Which I think is something in me wants to say that's abusive, like, because I know in abusive households, that's what they hold over your head, is like, they make you feel like everything is scarce, right? They make you feel like everything is scarce, and that's how they control you, and that's how they get you to take the least, and that's how they get you to do the most while taking the least, right? Because everything is scarce, so you better come and get these little crumbs, and fine, you don't want it, you're not going to comply, fine, starve. That's the attitude of the city. And I'm not being abstract. That's what it is. It's very mean-spirited. There's a very mean-spirited vibe to New York City public services. And so, especially because they use words like comply. Like, girl, dystopian. But when you go to the LGBT centers, they don't have that kind of vibe anymore. When you go to the LGBT centers, nobody's asking you for your income. Now, if they're helping you to sign up for like a city program, of course, with the city program, they're going to ask you for that or whatnot. But you don't need to like prove to them that you're ass broke to get a meal, to get a little free lunch. You see what I'm saying? And so there's a lot less shame around coming there and participating. So, and when I used to go to the door, right, it's not the same for like Ali Forney, because like Ali Forney is very much like, we here, we homeless. The door is not like that. The door attracted youth from all walks of life, which I loved, because you had different types of people that would not have otherwise met. not every, some of those kids who was at the door, some of them struggle with drug addiction. Some of them got kicked out their parents' house. Some of them had abusive households and they had no support outside of there. And so that was the only place they could come and feel community. Other kids, like when I started going to the door, it saved me later on from when I fell out with my mother when I was 18. But like I was going there from before I graduated high school and I was going there to hang out. I was going there to do music and to go to dance classes and I made a bunch of friends there. You see what I'm saying? Like that is how that is, right? And I had a place to live. I was walking up the block. A lot of those kids lived outside of the borough. I was walking up the block back to LES, you know, to go home, you know, to my mom who made dinner, or I made dinner at home. You see what I'm saying? So it attracted people from different walks of life. And you never know, you could be the next one. It could be you, because look what happened. Eventually, I did need those services, right? Eventually, I did need those services. And that's how I found out about Ali Forney through them. And then that's how I got my housing for a while. And that's how I lived until eventually me and mommy made up and I went back home, you know? But that's how I survived. And you know what? The reason why I think that stuff like this is important, because what I've been thinking about the last couple of days is this very thing that I'm bringing up now, that having community support should not be contingent on you having nothing. Let's prevent people from having nothing, right? Let's make people feel supported and have gratitude and feel like there's enough to go around, because that's what makes people want to support others, right? When you foster an environment of scarcity, that makes people feel like they have to grab at everything for themselves at the end of the day, and they have to compete with other people, and then they're less likely to be altruistic, right? A church, what I like about church is because church is not predicated on you being poor, even though a lot of the sermon of like Jesus and a lot of that stuff has to do with that, church is for people. Church is very marketed toward people of all walks of life. They want to invite everybody there. And so it lends itself more to community altruism and to everybody pitching in. It lends itself more to a potluck culture. You see what I'm saying? Where like we pass around that basket, right? And the basket is what made it possible for somebody to get their rent paid if they needed it that time. You know, it made it more, it's almost like susu, you know? Like, okay, so like growing up, sometimes my mom used to do this thing called susu, right? And in Spanish, it's sociedad, right? So she would do the susu, and basically susu is basically this thing where you get together with like a bunch of ladies, right? And or people in general, it's not just women, right? You get together with a bunch of people and y'all all put money into a pot, basically, right? Y'all all put money into a pot. Don't take that too literally, but that you all put money into a pot. And then once everybody has donated, one person gets that money, and then the next time it goes to the next person in a circle. So everybody donates it and one person gets that money, and then everybody donates and then up, and it was a level playing field that everybody paid into. Everybody got their turn, and you knew when your susu was coming up and you knew you would have something, you know, you would not be without, right? I need to do a susu. What the hell? Why am I not? We losing recipes, y'all. Who's doing the sociedad? I need that. I need that susu. So I think that kind of vibe is something that can be cultivated when the playing field is more level, because nobody is looked down upon. Nobody is put on a pedestal. The good thing about the LGBT stuff too, is that, and you know what? Actually, the door was not just for LGBT youth. Not everybody who went there was gay. Now, of course, it attracted a lot of LGBT youth because LGBT youth don't be having places to go. So stuff like this is places that are going to attract a lot of us, because these are the only types of places that don't make us feel, that don't like disenfranchise us and make us feel like, push toward the fringe, right? But a lot of straight kids went there, right? And it encouraged straight kids and gay kids and trans kids to all, like, you know, and bi, you know, whatever, on the spectrum, like, everybody's kind of, like, coexist, right? And there wasn't a lot of drama on the basis of, you know, sexuality and gender in those places. So I think that's something I want to carry these elements into whatever we create next. And I think what I'm describing is like a social club kind of situation. But I don't want to lose the churchy aspect of it, because I think that's what's unique to what I want to do. I need, like, that's important to have, like, that, and maybe those things don't, that's important. Just imagine if you had church where you could come and everybody came on Sunday and it was a big ritual and we all just had like a big concert. Everybody played music together. Everybody played drums together, right? So I was doing some youth, I was a teaching artist at this high school back in the winter, right? And this school is the school in Brooklyn where they have implemented, like, the principal decided that everybody learns how to drum. Everybody. It's not an elective. It's just a school-wide ritual. And they all play drums together, like, in assembly, I think, like, once a week. And all the kids know how to play drums. And it's just what they do as a community. That is so fucking fab. Excellent idea. And we don't think about things like that as being practical things that you can implement in this, like, modern Western society. But you could really just give everybody a bunch of drums and say, come on, y'all, we sitting in a circle and we can play drums every Sunday. And that's healthy for people's development in so many dimensions of our being, you know? That's good for social development to be comfortable with being in your body in the presence of other people and not being in your head. You see what I mean? That's good for emotional processing, for catharsis, right? In a safe space where you feel like you can shake and holler in the presence of other people, and it's not embarrassing, and it's not, and we're all doing it together. That's important for developing skills of cooperation and community with people, but also developing skills for personal gain. You see, like, having music skills, having the skill of singing, having the skill of, you know, singing encourages awareness with the body and understanding of your muscles and understanding of being gentle and of balance and of things like that, you know? Of intention, of applying intention, and also trusting your body. You have to learn to trust your body. As you practice and you learn to do something, you have to learn to trust your body to do it without you gripping so tight with your mind, right? Those are foundational things for a human being's psychological development that music teaches, right? And so, being a musician, music is going to be central to anything that I imagine. I want that. We don't have that as much. It's not like music education, at least in the classroom form, in the facilitated human form, is not as accessible. Yes, you can go on YouTube all day long. Yes, you can download an app just like this. However, that'll never compare in a lot of situations. That'll never compare to learning from other human beings and learning with other human beings in physical space. There is something that virtual, even if you go and you do a Zoom meeting, there is something that a Zoom meeting does not have that being around people in physical space does have. And I know we don't want to acknowledge that right now because our bosses and corporate entities are weaponizing that against us because they're uncomfortable with us working in the comfort of our homes because they want to micromanage us. However, when you put that aside, there absolutely is something irreplaceable about being in physical space with other human beings in most cases. I'm not talking about you if you have a special case where that is not the case, where it's a neurodivergent situation and that causes distress for you, or if you have a health issue where you cannot, you see what I'm saying? Like, in most cases, right? Earlier, I have recorded more and it has stopped recording in the middle of my recording. So I don't even remember what I spoke about and what I didn't. And I had wrapped it up pretty well. I'm really disappointed that that happened. However, I think that I wanted to talk about food as well. I think that the skill of growing food and the knowledge of food should be more widespread. You know, in indigenous communities, and please excuse me if I said this already. This has gotten really long and I don't and it would take me long to listen to the whole thing and go back. Anyway, whatever. In indigenous communities, there's nothing wrong with saying it twice. In indigenous communities, those things were more common, right? And I don't put indigenous communities on a pedestal. I feel like that's something that happens when we're trying to talk about what we don't like about capitalism. These were still just people at the end of the day. However, it was more common in indigenous communities that people understood a little something about the land, right? And how that works, and how feeding yourself and how self-sufficiency works, right? And agriculture and things of that nature. And also agriculture in the sense that it's seasonal and it works with the flow of, like, the environment and not, you know? Anyway, I would love for that to be a big element of this space that I'm imagining, or this system that I'm imagining, because I'm not imagining this as like one specific space. I'm imagining this as a framework for us to, anywhere you are, build a system of support for everyone around you so that everyone can feel content. I think that everything else comes after contentment. And that's what I mean when I keep saying sit in your cunt. I'm talking about contentment. I'm talking about the ability to be present. The ability to be present where you can be in a conversation and be in that conversation, or be present enough that you remember to call your mother, or you remember to call your grandmother. You see what I'm saying? When your mind is calm and your spirit is calm, that's when you remember to pour into other people. It's hard to do that when you're not calm, right? It's hard to pour into yourself. It's hard to engage with your interests. It's all of those things. There are so many hurdles against that, to the point where we have to take Adderall to engage in the things that we already love, because we just cannot sit in our cunt. Right. So when your basic needs is taken care of, right, and you have around you a system of support and a community, you can relax and your true self can come forward. Your true self can come to the surface, right, and bob to the surface, because it's always going to do that when you stop doing that other thing. Right. And so that's what sitting in your cunt is about. That's why I keep saying that. And a realization that I had, and I guess I'm happy that I get to say this now, because I thought I was finished recording and then I came up with this and then I was like, damn, I wish I got that in there. Even though I'm very disappointed that I missed the natural flow of what I was originally saying. I thought about how there's this age out system. So there's an age out system with the door and Ali Forney and all those like LGBT programs that like I was a part of, a lot of them. And I think it's important for that not to be an aspect of this framework that I'm imagining, because there has to be help on many levels, and we want to curate a space, we want to curate community where there is intergenerational connections, right? How many people my age, right, unless you have a good relationship with your family, if you don't have a good relationship with your family, do you know children? Do you know old people? I want you to know that's very unnatural. If you have no relationship with any child at all, and you have no relationship with an elderly person, that's unnatural. And that's no way to live. And you're living an incomplete existence. And that's not to make anybody feel shame or feel panic about what they're going through, because children and old people are everywhere. There's nothing to panic about, right? You can foster a connection at your own pace. And in a way that you feel comfortable with it. However, I think that our spaces, I think that it's our communal responsibility to foster spaces that encourage connection across generations. And I also dislike the idea that adults don't need support, and you're on, and when you're in these programs, you're on a ticking clock that, like, if you don't get your shit together by a certain time, you're gonna be kicked out the door in the wind, or you're gonna have to go to the regular shelter where they be stabbing people. The DHS shelter. I think that's the regular shelter, the DHS shelter, right? The other ones. And that's what happened. That's what that was like. That's what that experience was like. And thank God, or the powers that be, that, you know, my mom and I had rekindled, and I just went back home eventually, because there were some imperfections in how those systems did fail me in some ways, because, you know, I remember I wanted to get out on my own the first time around when I went through those things, and I wanted to get my own place, and, you know, there's a lot of things in place to help you, to help facilitate that. However, a lot of people in the nonprofit sphere are very overworked. And I remember my case manager was extremely overworked. And so what ended up happening is that she strung me along on the path of getting this one thing that I ultimately was not qualified for in the end. Actually, I had to go stay in the regular people shelter to apply for it. And the regular people shelters, we know they not, let me stop saying regular people shelters. The general population shelters were not safe. They're not safe and they're not good conditions. I did not want to go live there. I was scared to live in the LGBT shelter. I was scared to go there. I was like, I'm going to get in here. These kids going to rob me. They're going to try to beat me up. They're going to try to stab me. They're going to be, you know. And there's a, especially like if you go into like spaces like these and you're like well-spoken or anything like that, like you stick out like a sore thumb, and sometimes it can attract the wrong attention. So I was scared to like be in there. Right. Luckily it was a beautiful experience, most of it. But to go back to my point about the aging out process, like I think I want it to be something that's like all ages, and everybody could get support. If you're an elderly person, you could come get support. If you're in your mid-30s, mid-40s, mid-50s, there is support for you. You're never going to be on your ass. We have to get rid of that. We have to address that. That's crazy. There should never be a time that you're just on your ass. And it should not be a personal failure if you don't have food to eat, if you don't have a place to live. How is that a personal failure? We have to stop. That's not okay. We have to stop that. We have to stop that. And yes, I'm imagining, and some people may listen to this and say, well, if you wasn't so broke, bitch, this would not be, you would not be thinking like that if you wasn't so broke. And maybe you're right. However, I don't think there's anything wrong with imagining a system that I could benefit from, because if I could benefit from it, everybody could benefit from it. That's the tea. That's the shade right there, girl, because a lot of people, when they imagine a system that could benefit them, it's a system that could only benefit them. That's the shade. So I really feel like that's part of the key. That's a big part of the key. There are some points that I feel like I have not said because I feel like I don't remember what they were. Ay, Dios mío, like, I gotta stop and regroup. Hold on. Okay, so it's a couple things. Okay, the first thing that I thought about in my break when I regrouped was just a little tack on to this last point about the kicking. Oh, Jesus Christ. The ticking clock. This point about the clicking. Oh, God. Wow, that's fucking me up. Anyway, I would love the reality of a situation like this, of a structure like this, to be that it emboldens people to take their time looking for a job or a career that suits them and benefits them. Because if more of society functioned this way, that would put the pressure on employers to actually treat people right, right? This would be another indirect layer of defense in the way that unions are for workers' rights, right? Because even if you don't have a union, bitch, why the fuck do I gotta sit here and be abused by you? I'ma be fine anyway because I'ma have a place to live and I'ma have food to eat. People only deal with abuse because they need to get their basic needs met. You see what I'm saying? But if their basic needs are met, girl, fuck you and fuck this job. And then you can take your time and you can actually find a job or a career in which you feel happy and you can make more high quality contributions to those companies or to those institutions or whatever it is. And then in turn, those services and those institutions do better because they are filled with people who are happy to be there. Right? So everything is connected when it comes to like supporting a better quality of living for us in general, right? Nobody should be worrying about being on the street or having nothing to eat or having no place to shower, you know, and no place of comfort and sanctuary, right? Because that's also a basic need. That's what we forget when we think about food and water and shelter. Sanctuary and comfort, that is central to the human experience, and everybody needs a place of sanctuary and comfort. So that's what church provides for a lot of people. They literally call it the sanctuary, you know? And that's why the churchy element is big in my head for being a part of this new system that this new framework that we build everything that we imagine for ourselves into, right? This is something that I want to be a framework that anybody can apply. It's just a way of thinking, right? And it's a way of organizing that anybody can apply to anything. So right now I'm working on my album. Some of these things that I'm talking about, I feel like should be inherent in that. And it's my first time doing it, so I'm figuring out how to do that. But yeah, like this should be something that you can apply that like it can show up in so many different ways, not just in the form of like the social club. It should just be how we think about everything, right? There was a point that I had made that I think got left out because of the cutting that I remembered now. So I had made a point about growing up and how I had never imagined another reality for myself outside of being a rich and famous person, because it's just that when I have gifts like mine, that's what society teaches you is for you and is for your path. And that's the way that you live, right? So I looked at the television and I said, oh, that's me. I saw my reflection in the performers on TV and I said, okay, I want to be a movie star. Okay, I'm going to be rich. So I've never really, until like maybe like 2020, when we were all kind of like, okay, the world has just ended. Let's imagine something else. Basically, when we were forced to, I had never, and I'm telling you, I had never imagined anything else for myself. When you hear celebrities talk about, you know, when you watch those like winners affirmations, like motivational supercut videos on YouTube, and the celebrities talk about, I never imagine, like, this is all I ever, and you hear about Beyonce, and that's, like, all she ever thought about, like, very much that's my experience, is, like, this is all I've ever thought about, is being a musician, and being, like, an entertainer. However, what I realized is that I don't need to be a rich person to be happy. And that's not a new saying. That's not something that I've invented. However, I think it doesn't hit when you hear it, because when a lot of people hear it, it doesn't hit because it comes with this like kind of like moral idea that like the individual, and people like me tend to have a very strong personality and sense of self. So when people like me hear, like, I don't have to be rich to be happy, and I don't have, we hear settle. We hear be less of yourself. We hear don't shine as hard, okay? It's immoral to shine that hard. No, shine bright, shine hard. But you know what? When you realize that that community is all you need. All we need is each other, right? And that you have what you need to be happy and to be content. And it doesn't have to come from outside. Once your basic needs is taken care of, it does not have to come from outside. That is liberating, and that is so freeing in a way that like it encourages me to want to shine more. Cause honestly, I'm gonna tell you something. You know why I want money? Now, yes, I love clothes. I love clothes. I love fashion. I love to look a certain, I love cosmetics. I love all those things. So there's that part of it. Like I love that. I want to engage in that. But there's also, I want to have the money to do more extravagant art projects. But when people band together, and when people have their needs taken care of, some pretty extravagant art comes out of that. That's when art usually starts to thrive, right? A lot of times in the past, like in America and in other countries, music was government subsidized, right? And when people had what they need, and it was not something hard to, and it was made accessible to them, they made amazing music, and it really created entire genres, and it created so much rich culture and history. So that's really how that works. And I don't need to be, right now, the reality is in this world, it feels like you have to be a rich person to engage in art on the level that you want to. Because even though a lot of the tools have been democratized, and I could like do all the 3D modeling and everything from my computer, and I can make music from Ableton, which I'm recording into right now, and I can, you know, I don't have the freedom of my mind being free and my spirit being still enough, I can't really sit in my cunt enough to fully engage with this on the level I want to, because capitalism is pulling me everywhere else. And all the sub-manifestations of capitalism are plaguing my mind. So that's what I'm trying, that's what I want to undo moving forward. We have to create a world where when you think about being a rich person, it's like, for what? Okay, yeah, that would be cool, but I don't need all that money to go travel. I don't need all that money to live in a nice place. I live in a nice place. We have, like, all the conveniences are accessible. They're everywhere. You see, that's what I'm imagining. And capitalism wants to tell you that that is a utopia. And the older generation, a lot of them people want to tell you that's not possible. And that's not true. Because everything I'm saying is very simple, practical things that we can implement, that we can learn to. And a lot of it is just a shift in thinking and a shift in perspective and a shift in values. Notice how a lot of what I said, I have not dived into the practicality of like creating the infrastructure. I have not dived into building codes and leasing and this and that and this and that. I haven't done that. I don't, before we even get there, it's a shift in values, right? Because it starts with one person. For me, I'm learning to sit in my cunt, and that's what's causing all of these ideas right now for me. That's what's causing this liberation. And now I'm spreading these ideas to other people. That's how it starts. So like, I feel like I want to create a world where I don't feel like I have to be rich to be the version of myself that I'm imagining to be fly. I don't want to have to be rich to be fly. I don't want to have to be rich to fly in a plane and explore the world and engage with other people. I don't want to have to be rich to engage in romance and have a partner and have somebody to lay down with. Listen, if I have somebody to cuddle with every night and my basic needs are taken care of, bitch, I'm a happy bitch. Fuck everything else. And it's going to make me want to make art. And I'm going to be making my art and I'm going to be a happy camper. It's very simple. And we are, most of us are that simple, but we have not learned to get to know ourselves that way because of, you know, the way that we're taught to think about ourselves, that like you're a success or you're a failure or you have to get it out the mud and you have to do it yourself and you ask for help when you're on your last. Having help is not just the norm in a lot of ways, right? Anyway. And also, I don't want to have this air of like demonizing the world that we live in, because as you can see, I have a lot of examples throughout my life that are informing what I'm saying right now, right? So like I said, the sun will always rise and there is always an example of what's good if you open your eyes and look. So I'm going to start to wrap this up because I'm at 65 minutes. This is officially the longest episode that I've done so far. And I feel like podcasts usually only go like an hour. But again, I'm just doing this because I want to do it. So it's going to be what it's going to be. So if it's going to be longer, it's going to be longer. Listen if you want to. Don't if you don't. I just want to read some quotes from my notes from this book that I have read in 2020 called The Healing Wisdom of Africa by Maladoma Somé. And this book really talked about a lot of indigenous wisdom from his tribe. He's part of the Dagora tribe. I forget what country that is in modern day times, but in colonial times. But he's part of the Dagora tribe, which is a West African tribe. And he really talks about how their wisdom could be beneficial to the modern Western world and how it could, and you know, and he just goes through his experiences. And I think it's a great book that everybody should read. It's by Maladoma Somé. And so I just want to just rapid fire read off some quotes just to wrap this up, just to leave some food for thought that I think is relevant to this. And I may make little notes in between. So I have some quotes in here that is talking about genius, right? He talks a lot about genius. He says, to see the genius in a young person is to give it the fertile ground required for it to burst forth and blossom, for it is not enough to be born into this world loaded with such a beauty. The newborn must be assisted in giving birth to the genius that he is born with. The West identifies genius as a great intelligence or as an exceptional talent. I don't reject that definition, but it is different from the indigenous definition, which sees genius as an open line that flows through a person from the other world. If genius has, hold on, where do I want to go? A mentor is, in a sense, the midwife of the adolescent spirit, right? So I like this because when I talk about intergenerational relationships and I talk about having third places, this is the place where children and when people's ideas, even if you're not a child, where your ideas can be fostered and nurtured because you have community. You need community for that. And you need people who are more experienced than you in certain ways to provide mentorship, to help become a midwife to the great ideas that you have in this, to bring to the world, right? And that is where you can be valued as an individual within community, right? And so that's why I don't want to badmouth socialism, because I know that's how it has come across online. I don't know if that's inherent in socialism itself, but I know online a lot of the time when the people who want to live in a more community-oriented world who call that socialism, a lot of time it comes at the cost of the individual, right? And it just means that you don't get to have anything, like, nice, because having anything nice is bad. and selfish, and you take only what you need, and you like it's very scarcity based. Like, even though like capitalism is also scarcity based, they're both scarcity based, except they have different approaches to that scarcity, I feel. At least that's how, like, the way that people, because it's just like Christianity, right? Like, Christianity has some very good morals. I agree with most of the, not most, well, a lot of the things in Christianity. However, the way that people commonly enforce that is very skewed. And I feel the same way about socialism. So I like this thing from him when he says that. I'm looking for specific stuff around ritual, right? So... okay, listen to this, y'all. So, there's so much I want to read here. I might have to do an episode on this book. So, in the indigenous mind, one reason people do ritual is that they do not want to repeat history. Dealing constantly with unfinished business from the past. To appeal to the ancestors through ritual is based on an understanding that the catastrophe happens when you fail to seek their guidance. And so in some ways, ritual is like preventing the self from falling into destructive patterns. The symbolic spiritual realm speaks to the psyche in the same way that a travel guidebook speaks to the conscious self. It confirms our location. Human beings need these reminders on the journey of life. They are billboards of the psyche. The most prominent kind of ritual is the radical ritual because it involves community. Radical ritual is a dramatic interaction with the spirit for the purpose of removing from the psyche something that has been seriously troublesome to a person in the village. A maintenance ritual is focused on making sure that all the nuts and bolts of one's spirit are still in, because in the book he lays out different types of rituals. So a maintenance ritual is focused on making sure that all the nuts and bolts of one's spirit are still in place. Holding together the physical self, in it, all that is required is a full-hearted prayer to the spirit guides, thanking them for their presence and requesting that they stay nearby in order to lead the day ahead. You state what is ahead, the tasks you are facing, and request the ongoing assistance of the ancestors or any spirit ally you know. The maintenance ritual is intended to keep one in a normal running condition. It is a self-care at the level of the spirit. So this informs a lot of my thinking about ritual. And this is why I went to church today. And this is why I still embrace that ritual, because it's about maintaining your psyche and your psychological state and your emotional state. And it helps with emotional processing and keeping us in running order and keeping us in homeostasis, right? And I don't attach myself to any specific ideas about how the spirit world works with him and how he, you know, looks at it. But he also did leave it open enough for you to say any spiritual ally. So whatever you think of. So like, I know for me, I love, I'm a psychedelics person. Not that I want to take that on as an identity. However, I have worked with plant medicine, so to speak, for a few years of my life now, not a few, I'm since I was 17, I started, right? Which might've been too young. However, I had to explore for my own to find something that worked for me. The things that were presented to me were not clicking with me at the time as a youth. So I tend to, I definitely very lightly and softly and a bit abstractly believe plant medicine to contain like conscious spirits or entities that can be allies for me, right? I think the plants have a spirit to them, right? I do lightly believe that. I always keep it open-ended because truly, who knows, right? I think our experience is too vast to even like completely comprehend it. But there's something to it, at least I'll say that. And the way that they facilitate change in a person's life definitely makes it very easy to believe that they're a spiritual ally. Even if maybe that's not the case, right? And so for me, if I'm working with a mushroom, right, and I'm taking that, maybe I'm microdosing on it for like, you know, a certain amount of time, or I had been taking it, or like I've fostered a relationship with it in the past and I believe it to still be with me, I may still take part in, I may create a ritual for myself that helps me work with this beneficial consciousness, right? And I don't want my message to get lost in all those specifics, right? Because you don't have to believe in any of that to have a ritual that is going to feed your psyche in this way. So I just want to leave, I'm going to leave it off there. I'm at like 75 minutes. I'm going to come back to the thing I keep saying. It's about learning to sit in your cunt. And this framework is to allow more people to be able to sit in their cunt and not be taken advantage of. This framework is to make it harder for people to be, make it not harder, but make it not so easy for people to fall into isolation, and to develop, I don't want to say properly, but to develop beneficially to themselves and others, by having support. This framework is to allow people to have dignity at all times and not have to, submit to abuse, and punitive, institutions in order to get their needs met. We have to stop letting ourselves be debased in that way. So I want to end it on a positive note. I feel like I've ended the last two episodes on a very like ominous kind of like, yeah, think about that vibe. But I'm excited about thinking about things this way. I'm excited. I have a lot of faith in us as people. I have faith in what we can become. I have faith in us being able to look at our past differently and take positivity from it, not to fake that, or, you know, I'm not about the toxic positivity, love and light. I'm about real processing, but I do believe that coming into your cunt in the present will allow you to make peace with your past, and it will give you faith for the future, and you can look at the future with optimism. A symptom of our time right now is people are feeling very hopeless. And I don't think we have to live that way. And we have each other. So I'm excited about us having each other, and things are going to get better. Everything you look at in the world right now that is horrible is going to get better. I'm not saying utopia and paradise. I'm not talking about that, but I'm saying better. We have come forward from the horrors of yesterday, and we will continue to come forward from that. And we all have each other, y'all. And that's something to be happy about and to rejoice about. There is another way to live. There's another way to live. Yeah. So God bless everybody. When I say God, it's a shorthand for a lot of my ideas. But God bless everybody.